You may be looking for a good summer read, and you might want to think about picking up A Loon Lake Mystery. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have the author of that mystery series with us today, Rhinelander's own Victoria Houston. Her latest book is called Dead Loudmouth, and maybe you've read her books. I think she has 16 in the series. You may have some questions about any of the characters or plots. May have a question about writing mysteries. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. The title is The Larry Mueller Show. Victoria, welcome back.
Well, good morning, Larry. Great to be here.
It's, you know, I always look forward to, I wonder when Victoria is going to have her next Loon Lake mystery out. Here it is. Oh, boy. For those who are new to your books, would you give a little background on the location and the main characters?
Well, Loon Lake is purely fictional, and I have to point that out frequently because there are 14 Loon Lakes in Wisconsin. But my Loon Lake happens to be north of Wausau, south of Land O'Lakes, to the west of Goodman, and east of Park Falls. And it sort of hovers overhead like Brigadoon. And it has touches of Three Lakes, Eagle River, Minocqua, Rhinelander, you know, just quintessential lake country. And then there are three main characters who recur through the books. All 16. Neither of these characters has been murdered yet, thank God. And we have...
Don't ever do that.
Oh, please. Yeah, there are a couple things I have to remember. No children get murdered, no dogs get murdered, and none of my three characters.
There you go. So it's Llewellyn Ferris, the police chief.
Llewellyn Ferris is the chief of police, and she's about 50. And she's now been, you know, chief of police for about 3 years. And she met the other main character, Dr. Paul Osborne, Doc Osborne, when he thought he was going to take fly fishing lessons from a guy named Lou, but it turned out to be Llewellyn Ferris, who's an expert fly fisherman, in addition to being the chief of police. And Doc Osborne is widowed. He had lost his wife about 4 years ago. And then there's his neighbor, who, to the frustration of Doc's late wife, kept, you know, lived in a trailer home next to their beautiful house. And this is Ray Pratt, and he's about 32, and he's a fishing guide who wears a stuffed trout on his head and tells really bad jokes. And when times are slow, he digs graves for a living. And I tell people these characters are distilled from memories. And so that guy in particular is distilled from memories of one of my brothers and two of my cousins from Stevens Point and who they were like in their early 20s, although I'm not sure they've grown up yet, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, they don't age, do they, in your books from 1 year?
No, you know, I made this decision a long time ago. For readers who aren't familiar with me, I worked in book and newspaper publishing for about 15 years. And during that time, I worked with a number of very well-known cartoonists, including Gary Trudeau, who does Doonesbury, Gary Larson, who did The Far Side, Calvin and Hobbes creator, Bill Watterson, and then Kathy Lynn Johnston, who did For Better For Worse. And what I observed during that time was that these cartoonists had to make a decision if they were going to age their characters or not. And a couple of them did. Trudeau did for a short time, and then he stopped. And I just decided, as I started the series, not to age my characters because I like who they are. With Doc Osborne and Llewellyn Ferris, there's a bit of attraction there, and I thought, let's avoid Viagra territory if we can. And... however, the settings of the story are always within the last couple years in, you know, real time, because I like to be able to include technology, cell phones, everything we're doing in social networks, that kind of thing.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. And they, I should also mention your granddaughter, Doc's granddaughter, Mason, isn't it, plays a role in this. Usually they're a relative or somebody. There's always somebody else playing a kind of a secondary but important role.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, when I start a book, something I have to think about is what's going on in my main characters' lives. And that's how it is that you'll be hearing about either Doc Osborne's oldest daughter, Mallory, the younger daughter, Erin, and she's the one who has three children. And in this case, we hear about Mason, the middle child, who's, you know, a girl, but she loves to fish. She's really, I would never say this out loud, but I think she's her grandfather's favorite.
Well, there, sort of give us the... I've read the book and I enjoyed it, but maybe give us sort of the outline of the book and what people might expect to read.
Well, let me just say this. I give a funny library... I give a library talk that I hope is funny, but the title of the library talk is The Three Major Life Mistakes I've Made, Not Counting My Ex-Husband, that forced me to write these fishing mysteries. Well... one of the ex-husbands were really not mistakes, and one in particular was an investigative reporter. And during the 15 years that we were married, it was great for me, though I didn't know I'd be writing mysteries, but it was great to be an observer of the crimes and murders, homicides, etc., that he dealt with in his everyday job. And this included such things as the relationships between different police departments, between the journalists and the police, between journalists and the medical examiners. And all of this has just been, you know, really great material for me. But there was one episode, and this is about 35 years ago, and of course now this dates me a little bit, but we were having coffee on a Saturday morning, and we were reading the Kansas City Star. Now, we both knew that newspapers had a habit of taking, in their hope to be, you know, family-friendly, they would take the juiciest stories and hide them in the back of the paper. So we get to the back of the paper, and there's this brief story about this murder investigation on the West Coast. And we noticed which paper, you know, it was bylined from. And my ex happened to know a reporter at that paper. So he called him up right away. Well, it turns out this guy covered this crime. And all I'm going to say now is that it involves the interesting use of a piano in a way that you would never expect. But that was very integral to that particular crime. And, you know, it just, the memory of it never left me for 35 years. And one of the things I get a kick out of with these books is, you know, stuff can happen in the New York City, Los Angeles, you know, Seattle. But all I can think of is that could happen in Loon Lake.
Well, I looked at that and I thought, where did she ever come up with that?
Yeah, don't you wonder? Gee, oh. I did change a lot of, I changed a lot of detail because one of the things, when you've got a sort of a seed of an idea that's based on a true story, you want to be sure, A, you're not going to get sued, and B, that you're not going to, you know, grievously cause emotional distress for people. So details were changed.
Yeah, and it was 35 years ago as well.
Exactly. And he and I may have been the only two people who really noticed the story and were captivated. But.
Well, you've got a good memory.
Well, thank you. I love hearing that since I can rarely find my car keys.
Oh, man. Well, I've got to ask, and I always love your titles.
Well, you know, when I first started writing the series, the first manuscript I turned in was titled Dead Creek. Then the second manuscript I turned in, which was actually the first one published because the publisher wanted me to make some changes in Dead Creek, I turned that one in with a title that their marketing team changed to Dead Angler. Well, the third one I turned in had a different title, and this time the marketing guys changed it to Dead Water. And so my joke is, by that time, given a publisher was in New York City and these people don't get a lot of fresh air, I thought, you know, if I'm not careful, the next one's going to be Dead Duck. So starting with the fourth book in the series, I now use either the names of fishing lures or trout flies in the titles. And so the loudmouth comes from a bass lure, which Ray Pratt, the fishing guide, is coaching a college fishing team, and he's encouraging them, well, he's basically telling them, they're only going to be working with three different lures, and one of them is the loudmouth, and one of the kids doesn't want to use that because it's a bass lure. And Ray points out, you know, look, it is a really great lure, makes a lot of noise, it upsets the fish so much they want to attack it. And so that's where the title of that book comes from. And, you know, I always tell people, too, those titles are kind of interesting because, one, they are not clues to anything happening in the book. But on the other hand, for me personally as the writer, I have to have the title before I can start the book.
Ah. And you've done a lot of fishing in your day as well.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, you don't grow up in the North Woods without fishing. And when I was a kid in Rhinelander, we had a kiddie fish pond right in the middle of downtown. And I'm the oldest of eight kids, and my mom would just push us out the door with a cane pole and a little tackle box, and off we went to the J.C. kiddie fish pond. And then we'd come home with these bullheads. Everyone was really just, my dad took care of those. No, yeah. He was not going to clean them because they're hard to clean. I was proud because they were big, and no one wanted to eat them, although I've since had bullhead, and it was good.
So. I've eaten it, but I once stabbed myself with one of those spines, and I got a little infected, and it wasn't any fun at all. I think I was about 14 at the time.
Yeah, they are not attractive fish. And then my joke is that about age 11, I gave up fishing in favor of boys. And then at 50, I saw the light, and I took up fly fishing. And, you know, I like to say I gave up boys, but that's not exactly true.
Oh, boy. Victoria Houston, our guest today. She is the author of the Loon Lake Mystery Series. Her latest is called Dead Loudmouth. Great to have her with us today. Have you read the Loon Lake series? What's your favorite? What other mystery series do you like? What keeps you coming back to a mystery series like this one? Hope you'll join in. Maybe have a question about the writing process itself as well. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at death in northern Wisconsin today with Victoria Houston. She's the author of Dead Loudmouth. Great to have her along, 16th in her series on the Loon Lake Mysteries. And again, join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And you know, I was thinking about the series again. And, you know, it's nice. I've read all but I think the first one.
Oh, well, thank you. The first one would be, would you have read Dead Angler?
I did not read that one.
Oh, okay. Dead Angler and Dead Creek both came out in the same year because I turned in Dead Creek, and the publisher at the time pointed out that they only do cozies, and I hadn't heard that word before. And she explained that she wanted to do Dead Creek, but it didn't fit the profile of a cozy, which has no graphic violence on the page, no graphic sex, and no use of the F word. And I said, well, I don't have that. And she said, yes, but the marketing guys think your book is too dark. And it was very much a situation where, as with all my books, I'm a dedicated newspaper reader. So I read the Daily Wall Street Journal, Daily New York Times, our local paper, the Washington Post, and I clip the crime stories that appeal to me in those papers. And so in this case, there had been an article in the New York Times science section on the water quality issues around Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it was that the esters from the pulp industry remain in the water system as endocrine disruptors, and they cause hermaphroditic life forms. And so what I did, given this is fiction, I migrated that real fast into the human population. And so the marketing guys just looked at this editor and said, no hermaphrodites. And so she got back to me, and she said, this is the problem. And I said, well, I can fix it. And she said, I don't know how you can. Well, she didn't know that I had just co-authored a nonfiction book with a physician scientist who is an expert in the field of hormones. And I knew more about testosterone and estrogen than the average human being. So I was able to go back and scale back the health issues, but still provide motive for murder. In the meantime, she had said to me, well, you know, you've given us synopses for two more books in this series, so I'd like you to write, you know, what turned out to be Dead Angler. I'd like you to write that one first. And, you know, I really, Larry, write all my books so that you don't have to start at the beginning. Every book is, if you're a new reader, you can read that book and you'll get plenty of information on who the characters are and everything. But there are some people who like to start at the beginning of a series, and Dead Angler and Dead Creek, you know, are a good option.
And the former books or the previous books you've written are available.
Very much so. In fact, right now I get great support from Yankee Bookstore in Wausau, Book World all over the state. I've been doing signings every weekend. This next Saturday, I'll be at Mystery to Me in Madison. They're doing an author slam, and I'll be there from 1 to 3 Saturday. And then later in August, August 2nd, I'll be at Barnes & Noble in Wausau for their Mystery Book Club. But if people go to my website, victoriahouston.com, they'll see the schedule. This Friday, I'll be in Escanaba. I'm going to show up in Iron Mountain. Wednesday, I'll be in Stillwater, Minnesota. And so everything is listed there.
And that author slam kind of intrigued me. I've never been to an author slam.
I haven't either.
Well, I wondered what happened.
Well, this will be fun. I think the way it's set up is there's a gentleman by the name of Doug Moe, who's an author himself, and he's going to be doing different kind of Q&As, kind of questions and answers with a variety of authors, maybe each one for about an hour, hour and a half, starting Friday evening and continuing on through the day on Saturday. And it should be fun. It's quite a selection of people, writers, poets, that you know, really good
Doug,
fun literature.
Well, Doug's an old friend, and he's you will enjoy interacting with him. I can tell you that for free.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and he's very smart, and enough writing. He's written enough books on his own, so you're going to have a good time.
Oh, great.
Well, we have several callers online, so let's take a call. Bob in Green Bay, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. And Victoria, I want to tell you what an honor it is to speak with you. I have a little story. A year ago this June, my wife and I were at a rented cabin up north, and on Saturday it got rainy, so my wife picked up a book. It was called Dead Jitterbug. And
uh-huh.
I'll tell you what, we were fucked. Literally, after that, because we went home and researched your books, and we both read the whole series. We couldn't wait for the new book to come out. I ran out and got it. I read it the first day I got it.
Wow. Well, thank you. Boy.
And we've been passing it all along with all of our friends, and everybody really enjoys your stories. And on another note, I haven't read that many books in my entire life. And now, since then, I've read over 200 books.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, so got you back into reading. That's great.
I just want to say thanks, and we look forward to the next one.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
That keeps you going, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And you know, another little aside on that note is that my books have proven to be very appealing to middle school boys.
Oh.
And, you know, this is sort of a little population group that sometimes parents and teachers get frustrated trying to get these kids to read. But my books, because of the fishing angle in there, the boys tend to get a kick out of it. So I've had a number of teachers say to me that this works for them. And then the books, as I said earlier, relative to cozies, you know, I consider my books traditional police procedural mysteries, but they aren't gruesome. Kids aren't going to learn about anything illegal in there, and they're okay for middle school kids.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Dave in McGuanago has something for you. Let's go there. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I read a lot of John Sanford.
Unfortunately,
I haven't read any of yours, but I'm looking forward to picking up books and starting. But I'd like to know, how do you compare yourself to John Sanford?
Oh, John Sanford today writes more of a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, what I mean is a thriller is a book where from the beginning you know who the bad guy is, or you know who's in jeopardy. And then the book is sort of a race to see if the hero, the protagonist, is going to survive. Now, back in the day, John, I think, wrote more of a mystery.
Yeah.
And I would say he's a little more graphic than I am when it comes to gruesomeness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. If you like blood and guts, stay with John Sanford.
But
if you like a little more of a puzzle, that's me.
there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, and I enjoy John Sanford as well. And his is a different kind of book. You're exactly right. He's sort of changed over time.
Yeah, more of a thriller, because I just read one of his recent ones. But, you know, the neat thing about the Sanford books is very much like mine, they're set in this part of the country.
Yeah.
And that makes it a lot of fun for all of us.
Oh, absolutely. Dave, thanks.
Yes, thanks for calling.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Well, let's go to Carol in Watertown next. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I just wanted to talk to you guys about stopping talking down on bullheads.
Oh!
They are my favorite fish. I can't get enough of them anymore because there's not
good.
Money around. And I learned when I was a child how to clean them. I never got stung or stabbed by one. I know how to do it. And I was taught by my father, and I went fishing almost every day when I visit my grandparents because they lived on a river. And we caught bullheads every day.
Well, quickly tell us how to clean them.
How to clean them. First of all, you got to grab them behind those sharp fins in the front.
Okay.
And then you take a knife, and you just make cut the skin, and you go around cut around the top fin.
Okay.
And then you just get a pliers, or they have regular things that you can clean them with, and you pull the skin off. Don't take the tail off, because that's one of the favorite parts. you have to scrape that with a knife to get all the goo off of it, but
God.
They are wonderful. And all you use on them is salt, pepper, flour, and a little cornmeal to make them crispy and fry them.
Oh, that sounds great.
Sounds wonderful. Yeah, I only got stabbed once. you learn that pretty quickly. And my hand slipped a little bit, and I just stabbed myself.
Well, and you're quite right, because we went to a graduation party last year, and the father of the graduate was deep frying this fish, and he was using Shore Lunch with it.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely delicious, and my friend and I were convinced we were eating walleye. It was bullhead. It was so good. It was so good. Thank you for calling. That's great information.
That's wonderful. Thanks a lot, Carol, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a question about the series. Maybe you have a question about writing. Well, Victoria is always happy to help out in any way she can. Lois from Eau Claire would like to know if your books are available in large print.
You know, there are a couple. I know Dead Frenzy is. And I'm not sure about others, although through the library system sometimes you can get them. The issue is the large print book business is a whole little industry unto itself. And very much with all the changes recently with e-books and with downloads and everything, they have pretty that publisher, Thorndike, has pretty much stuck with doing primarily the top, you know, 20, 25 bestsellers in large print. So, and they're really challenged by the fact that so many people read on their iPad and their phones today. And if you're reading on your iPad, you can enlarge that print. And so that has really changed that business. And I'm sorry that I can't say that there are more books available in large print. But I will say that the trade paperback editions, which is really true for all the books from number 6 on, they have a larger print than that small mass market paperback print.
Yeah, they are. So, even for me, they're easy. I'm looking right now at Dead Loudmouth, and it's pretty easy to read.
Yeah, yeah.
The type is large enough.
Yeah.
Oh. We had Carol missed Carol from Hudson missed your comments about where to buy your books.
Oh, well, Carol, anywhere, but yeah. Definitely you can get them at Barnes & Noble, and if you're in Hudson, you can get them at a Book World store. Any independent bookstore is going to carry those books, and if they don't have it on the shelf, they can certainly order it for you. Maybe did I just say Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
I think you're quite close to Barnes & Noble there. And, for example, I'll be in Stillwater Wednesday, and Valley Bookstore up there is very supportive. And I know from Hudson that's maybe a, you know, half-hour drive. And, in fact, I'm appearing at their Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour. And that'll be fun, because if these folks are into their cocktails, they'll probably laugh pretty easy.
So. Yeah, talk. Wait an hour before you say anything and talk. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
And, you know, the other thing is I do like to support the independent bookstore, but, of course, the books are available online for sure.
Yeah.
So.
And, again, your own site, Victoria Houston. Houston is Houston.
Correct.
And it's, what's your website? We have it up on our Facebook page, I believe.
It's victoriahouston.com.
Yeah, it's up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. So if you forget and want to go back, just go back and look at our Facebook page and you'll find it.
Sure, and if you're on Facebook, I'm Victoria Houston's Mysteries.
There you go. John in West Bend, we turn to you next. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say my wife and I have read most of her books and we really enjoy them.
Oh, thank you.
And then secondly, I'd like to ask how you rate a couple of series. One is The Nero Wolf, and the other was the Donna Leon's stories from Venice. Have you read those?
I have. It's been a while. Nero Wolf was just classic. And then I don't know what else I can say. It's just he really reflects the era in which he was writing, and I enjoyed those, but probably read the last one maybe about 20 years ago. The Donna Leons are really quite good, and I need to pick up one of those myself pretty soon. Along that same line, if you haven't read them, you might want to take a look at Ross Thomas.
I haven't heard of him.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Look him up on Amazon. He's just from that same era, and he has a good mystery, good setting, and a really dark humor. very good dialogue. And then I love, I know lots of people like the Stieg Larsson and the Joe Nesbo, but I really, really like the first five books in Henning Mankell's Wallander series.
Oh,
those are terrific.
That ends so sadly, though.
Yeah.
they do.
Really, and sadly, you know that. But, yeah, and Donna Leone has become, it seems, very unhappy with the corruption in the society in her later books.
Well, you know, what's really appealing in those books, and this is true for Nero Wolfe, too, when people, when writers, mystery writers, are writing from the source of their own satisfaction in life, the author, Nero Wolfe, I mean, loved cooking and food. With Donna Leone, that setting, with Wallander, that setting in those foreign countries, it comes through so clearly, and it's so interesting. But Wallander is funny because I think to myself, why do I like these books? I mean, this character is depressed, he's overweight, and it's always raining. But yeah. I just enjoyed them.
Did you watch the series?
You know, I've been watching the Swedish version.
Oh, I have not seen it. No, I saw the one with Kenneth Branagh.
Well, I'm watching the Swedish version, and I have to tell you, it's superb, and you can get it off Netflix.
Oh.
One more tidbit. What always fascinated me is Rex Stout's favorite author was Jane Austen.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Is, you know, a very fine writer. And I think sometimes what you'll find is, people like writers who have a sense of realism and very good dialogue. And for me, for example, my favorite writer is Willa Cather, who wrote O Pioneers and My Antonia. And for me, reading her, either of those books, and I reread them every few years, it's like a really good class in how to write.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. John, thanks so much. Thanks so much for calling. I want to turn back to your book. I think one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed, and it's kind of scary, was your description of Mason. I don't want to give a lot away here, but her time on the water with that fish.
Yes.
I could just picture that in my mind, how that was going, and I thought, boy, you could make a nice movie out of this one.
Well, say that louder, and let's broadcast that across the United States. But you know, it's very interesting, Larry, because when I was a kid, and again, it's always fun to look at where your ideas come from. But when I was a kid, I was very ill with spinal meningitis when I was 5. And the doctors sent me to live with my grandparents right on the lake outside of Rhinelander here for the summer. And they taught me how to swim and, of course, to fish. And then my grandpa let me take the rowboat out by myself with my fishing rod. And you won't believe this, but one day, there's a weed bed, and today that my cottage abuts the land that my grandfather used to own. Mm-hmm. So I look at that weed bed every morning. But one afternoon, I'm out there with my little, it must have been a little cane pole or something, and a big fish took it and pulled me in that boat. And so that was the sort, and I mean, I didn't have the same experience Mason does, but that was the source of that idea. And I remember that. I just remember how frightening it was, because it was that weed bed is a real popular spot for musky fishing.
Well, you certainly capture excitement and a little fear, and it's a very vivid description.
Oh, good. Good. Excellent. If there's anything I want to do, it's terrify people.
Well, you know, how tough is it now for getting books published?
Boy, I think it's very difficult. I think I tell people, well, first of all, you've got the whole self-publishing operation going. So a lot of people want to bypass traditional publishers. But I think that the way your book is handled by a traditional publisher, and in my case, Tyrus Books, you know, I get these wonderful book jackets, terrific editing and proofreading, but you still really need to have a good agent. And my advice to people who want to do this is to look at the literary marketplace, which is a book at your library, or I think you can get it online, and it's got very good practical advice on how to find an agent, and it also gives the website in there for the where all the accredited agents are listed. But you know what you still have to do is, as they say, keep the butt in the chair. You have to produce the work, and you have to be able to show an agent a finished book in order to get that first contract.
And speaking of butt on the seat, are you working on another one?
I am. I'm really pleased to say that, again, very good support from Ben Leroy, who's the publisher for Tyrus Books, and I have a new three-book contract.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so people are going to keep dying in Loon Lake.
So you're working on a new one.
I am. I'm working on Dead Spider.
Dead Spider. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Lee from Madison called to say, by the way, that she's going to buy some of your books to donate to her middle school. So how about that?
Oh, I love that. That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
It's always so much fun to be able to talk with you. You put out a new book. You try to go every year, don't you?
I do. I turn in my manuscript in November, and that gives everyone plenty of time to work on it, to do what they have to do production-wise, and then we're able to publish June 1st, and that's right around, the opening of fishing season, maybe a week or two later, and, you know, summer vacation time, which is when you want to sit on the beach and read a book.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually perfect timing. Have you ever had a time when you thought, what am I going to write about next?
Larry, there's this old saying, let fear work for you. You do not indulge in that thought. You just keep doing research, keep talking to people. And, of course, when you're writing mysteries, I have to say some of your best ideas, in my case for sure, have come out of casual conversations with people.
Yeah.
You know? So I haven't had that experience.
Well, I'm glad you haven't, Victoria. It's always such a pleasure. And you're here in Madison on July 9th at Mystery to Me for the Author Slam, which sounds like a barrel of fun, especially with Doug Moe leading the way.
Yeah, it should be delightful. And by all means, it's a great place to buy books.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Victoria. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, take care. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Victoria Houston, oh, it's always so much fun talking with her. She is the author of the 16th book in her Loon Lake mystery series. This one's called Dead Loudmouth, set in Loon Lake, Wisconsin. It's not a lake. It's not an actual Loon Lake, although there's many of them here in the state. But you'll get a pretty good idea about where she's writing from when you read her book. It's always a lot of fun to have her on, and I'll bet the next one comes out, Dead Spider, and we'll be talking again with her. Just to switch gears a bit now, sometimes when a friend or family member gets sick, we step in and do whatever it is we can to help. Taking care of someone can be really stressful, and our guest, Kristen Litzelman, is a PhD and assistant professor at UW-Madison in Human Development and Family Studies. She specializes in family living programs through Cooperative Extension, the UW Extension School of Human Ecology. She'll be talking with us about the role of stress in health outcomes, not for the afflicted, but for the caregivers, because they're kind of afflicted too in some ways. You may be currently helping out a sick friend or a family member. How have you been affected? I hope you'll join in. What ways do you take care of yourself? Those are some of the things we'll be talking about. So call in at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.